welcome to Jay's Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Happy Labor Day to everyone. Hopefully relaxing at home today. Blake Murphy is off on this Labor Day long weekend. We are filling in. I'm Ben Schulman. She is Julia Kreutz. Tristan Marchigiani, Nick Blackmore, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes on this Monday, September 4th. The Blue Jays coming off of a sloppy but effective win over the Colorado Rockies. Not as sloppy as my my dangling headset.
It's a whole look. I need to chirp you just a little
Let's just get it out of the morning.
Yeah, if you guys are not watching our simulcast here, there one side of
looks great.
Headset is just dangling.
The other side, yeah.
Which is, can you hear okay?
I can hear great in my left ear.
That's amazing.
Which is, and you know, in my right ear is just getting the non-microphone feed. So we're, luckily we're not so far away. We're not, no one's remote.
Some Monday morning energy.
Yes.
Big time.
Yeah. Whoever like had an issue with this headset, I hope they've worked it out and that everyone's doing okay. But the Blue Jays, despite, you know, a rain delay and a really tough loss in the middle of that series, they do win yesterday over the Colorado Rockies. We're going to talk a lot about that. Talk about the Oakland Athletics series coming up. We have Zach Werden, associate editor with Sportsnet, coming up. We also have Kyle Glazer, Major League Baseball and prospect writer for Baseball America. He will join us in the second hour, and Zach Werden will join us in the first hour. But, you know, let's get right into it. I was here last night doing Jay's Talk with Sho Ali. You were covering the game as well. And, you know, the Blue Jays had a lot go wrong yesterday, as they did in many of the games in Colorado. Right. But they did end up eking out a 7-5 win. Chad Green gets the win for the Blue Jays. Jordan Romano picks up a save. The Blue Jays take the lead in the ninth inning amidst a huge storm, the second storm that had come in. But yeah, they were just essentially refusing to delay the game again. It was the second time. The people of Colorado are tough. It was the second time that they put on the video board at Coors Field, there's lightning in the area, clear from the top level, and didn't stop play. Before the first rain delay, right, they cleared the top deck and kept playing baseball, which is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
And then I get it more in the ninth inning because they were like, we can't delay this again. It was a 4-hour plus game with the delay, already 3-hour plus without it, coming off a couple 3-hour games.
Yeah. And on a getaway day too, right?
So you're not going to play them
on their way to California and all of that. Yeah. It does play a factor, and it is interesting to sort of analyze how those things, you know, especially in a long season and a long schedule, how those things affect play. I mean, the Blue Jays have every condition, obviously, to win this series in Oakland coming up. But, you know, rain delay, very long games at Coors, that may play a factor as they start the series today as well.
Yeah, for sure. And the Blue Jays, I mean, in pretty much every game, having to use their pen probably a bit more than they wanted to, whether you go to game one, where they do get five good innings out of Hyunjin Ryu. But in that game, because Chad Green struggled in his first game back, they used Jordan Romano in a game where they led 13-5 going into the ninth inning. In game two, they have to go to the bullpen a lot because Yusei Kikuchi struggled, not to mention the defense behind him struggled. And then in game three, Kevin Gausman certainly not having his best start of the season by far, but he's certainly going back out there, if not for the fact that he's delayed by an hour.
Absolutely.
And so you don't bring the most rested bullpen in, but you do at least bring a series win in. And a huge deal for the Blue Jays yesterday is the production of all of the guys that were not on this team pretty much, at least a month ago now, I guess. I can't remember the exact date that Davis Schneider came up, but you end up getting, you know, a big hit out of Davis Schneider to score Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You get Spencer Horwitz with three hits in the game, a home run and a hit that came with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on base as well to score him. Or rather to score Schneider when he was on base.
Yeah.
And you have three hits out of Ernie Clement, the biggest one coming in the ninth inning when he squeaked a ball just past Brendan Rodgers at second base into right field to score a run. The people loved it, and you can text in and let us know your thoughts about the Buffalo guys. 590-590 is the number to text. It was a huge day for guys who were like 27th, 28th, and 29th men on this 26-man roster recently.
Yeah, it has been a good development and something interesting to watch that isn't necessarily standings related here, right, Ben? As we drive into the final stretch of the regular season, certainly not something that you would expect from a team contending for a postseason spot, that these rookies or these young guys would come up and contribute the way that they have. But yeah, the injuries to Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman has obviously made this production sort of a necessity for the Blue Jays here as they try to navigate this this stretch without, you know, essentially half of their infield. And so to see Spencer Horwitz come in and really dominate, you know, he found out 20 or so minutes before first pitch yesterday that he was in the starting lineup. Brandon Belt's lower back has been acting up. It's been something that has been happening for a while now for him, and so Horwitz steps in and really makes the most of that opportunity, however it is that it came to be, right? So that is certainly a development. You can't really expect Horwitz or Clement or even Schneider, even though we keep waiting for him to cool down and it just doesn't seem to happen, to sort of keep this level of production, but the Blue Jays will take it, and it is essential that that they really get whatever that it is that these guys can offer right now, because this is a relatively easy part of the schedule when you think about facing the Oakland A's. But at the same time, without the key guys that are Chapman and Bichette, it's a welcome development for a team that was pretty healthy for most of the season, and now to be without these guys for the final stretch run here.
Yeah, they were about as healthy as anyone in Major League Baseball up until July 31st, pretty much when Bo Bichette goes out, because I think, you know, when you look at who's the healthiest, I think you want to look, obviously, just the quantity of injuries, but also, you know, not in a good way, the quality of injuries. Who are you losing? And the Blue Jays lose their best position player for over a month. He comes back, he's on the IL again. They've had Matt Chapman out, who's their best infield defender for a while, and even in a down season remains near the tops for them on the team in terms of home runs hit. And then Danny Jansen, who is right near the top in home runs hit on the team, and obviously every catcher is really important. So it's been massive, and I was really impressed by the bounce back that you got from Clement, because he had a really tough game in game two. I mean, he commits two errors. I actually was really liking a lot of his play at shortstop, and then it clearly wasn't that great on that day, and especially the fielding error that he committed. The throw was a deep throw. It bounced. It maybe could have been picked. That is what it is. But he commits two errors, and those errors cost the Blue Jays four unearned runs. If you look at a box score, he comes back, is a huge contributor in the win. And Horwitz, you know, not that he was really at fault in any way, but he comes out to pinch hit in the ninth inning of game two. A single would have given the Blue Jays the lead. And instead, he strikes out to end game two, comes back the next day on that short notice, and very quickly deposits his first home run as a major leaguer into the seats. And he actually spoke after the game, so it's pretty interesting. Let's take a listen. Spencer Horwitz hitting his first major league home run and having some family around while he did it.
My brother's name's Ben Horwitz. We grew up around baseball, grew up around sports. He was more of a football player for sure. But he beat on me enough, and that's where I get my competitive edge from. He's my best friend. I love him to death. And he's my BP thrower, and he's my everything. For him to be able to see my first homer is extremely special.
Older brother, younger?
Older, yeah.
Did you get the ball back?
Or? Yeah, I got the ball back. The staff of the Rockies were great. Got it back no problem. And luckily landed in the bullpen. Didn't have to give anything away.
Landed in the bullpen, by the way, because he hit it like 400-something feet. It bounced off the front of a facade and then rolled back into the bullpen. But that's pretty awesome. I mean, I think that, you know, for a lot of guys, their family also obviously really important in a journey like this. I think Davis Schneider has talked about how he almost gave up on baseball and that his parents kept him in it. Horwitz, a late-round pick himself, I believe he was like a 19th-round pick or something like that. It might actually be even a little bit later. I'll confirm that in a sec. But his brother, clearly a big deal, and really cool that they get to share that moment.
Yeah, and he was pretty categorical as well when asked who is getting the ball. It is Ben Horwitz. It's his brother, and so that is indeed extremely special. Horwitz did have family when he picked up his first MLB hit. His parents were there this time with a little bit, maybe less notice. only Ben makes the trip, and but it is really, really special to get those moments in the middle of a season that, you know, has been a little bit perhaps imperfect for the Blue Jays, a lot of ups and downs. And when you get those feel good stories, when you get the type of bounce back performance, like you said, Ben, after a couple of mistakes, of mental mistakes, even in game two of that series, that means a lot. And it does do something for sort of the mentality of the team going forward. We saw Kevin Gausman yesterday post game speak so highly about Horwitz, about Clement, about Schneider, you know, saying it's so good to see these guys perform the way that they have. It's a shot in the arm for the veterans as well, right? To see these guys not only step up and make the most of the opportunity, but help the team towards its goal of the postseason. So incredible individual performances, and also we must take into consideration what it does for the mentality of the team overall. It was very cool to hear Kevin Gausman, you know, with such high praise for the Buffalo Boys yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that, especially a little bit more coming up with Zach Werden, who will join us around 10:30 today. This is Jay's Talk Plus. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. Eddie and Fort Erie texting in about the guys from Buffalo now contributing with the Jays. You can text in at 590-590. He says, I'm very impressed with the guys that the Jays called up. Not only that, they're also making a case to be on the big club next year with all those free agents the Jays have after the season. It's semi-related. Baker from Linden says, why rush Chapman back in? He wasn't contributing offensively, and that is the problem right now. And I think, you know, especially on the note of next season, and even that related to a Matt Chapman, or a Whit Merrifield, or Brandon Belt, who we'll talk about a little bit more, or Kevin Kiermaier. I'm not saying all of those guys are gone, and they haven't brought up someone who could play center, so that is what it is with Kiermaier, but they do feel like there are some options here, whether it's the guys we've already seen or a few guys who still remain at Buffalo getting a little bit more seasoning that could really come impact this team in September, and then especially make the opening day roster next season, and maybe the Blue Jays can spread money in some different directions.
Yeah, that is going to be a fascinating development. We have someone like Addison Barger, right, that can perhaps come in and become the third baseman. Will that happen? We don't know. Injuries are obviously, or, you know, his ability to stay healthy is going to play a big factor here. But it is certainly good news for a team that has some big names that they're trying to obviously keep around, such as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and even Danny Jansen to a certain extent, right? Bo Bichette obviously signed that extension that buys him out of the his arbitration years, but this is going to come up as well in a near future. And so being able to sort of promote from within and keep that level of production is going to allow the Blue Jays to perhaps spend money elsewhere. But it's still so far away in the future, right? It's funny to think that we have a month left here in the regular season, and then, you know, the Blue Jays hoping to make the postseason as well. Who knows what next year will bring? You never know with baseball, especially with prospects.
Yeah, there's a lot that can happen both in the positive and negative direction. You never know. There are lots of guys who put up really nice, you know, 30 game starts to their careers and don't end up really panning out. There are lots of guys who struggle for seasons or more than that and end up turning into really good players. But I think for the Blue Jays, nice to get, use of some of the depth. It had started as a pretty rough year for the minor leagues for the Blue Jays with some injuries. And you know, even a guy like Barger really struggled to start the season, but all of a sudden that turned around a lot. They've had Aurelvis Martinez really kind of break through here and get to the AAA level, and he's looked really good. And then Davis Schneider and all these guys are really, really factoring in. And for Spencer Horwitz, not only was he a 24th round pick, but Davis Schneider, you know, for all of the lauding of it, a 28th round pick out of high school, Horwitz went to university. So in theory, that usually like means either you're better or your stock is worse in a way. And he got drafted in the 24th round already as a 21-year-old, unlike Schneider, who was still in his teens at that point in time. Most college players drafted in rounds that no longer exist are never going to sniff the majors.
Right on.
So it is pretty awesome that he ends up not just making the majors, but making a big impact yesterday. We mentioned Vladdy. I think we should get to it. In a lot of ways,
for sure,
he revolved around the story yesterday. And I think we should just just go first to the negative. It was essentially all we got texted about on Jay's talk yesterday. It's a lot of what people have been talking about. I think it overshadowed a lot of what else he did in the game, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr., after hitting a home run in his previous at-bat, hits a ball to the top third of the wall. He clearly thought he got it, and he walks out of the box and doesn't really start running probably until about halfway down the first baseline. So what should have been a double ends up being a single. He does advance to second on an error. A lot of people had issue with that. I actually thought that part of the play was kind of good. You know, certainly it was a good result for the Blue Jays that they gained the 90 feet that they lost by Guerrero not hustling. And I didn't mind the gamble overall. Yeah. It allowed any base hit to score him. Vladdy's not scoring on every double from first base. He is not in the upper echelon of sprint speed in Major League Baseball. But I mean, there's no way around it. It's a really rough play and a rough look from Guerrero.
I think. It's interesting because I thought he had it too.
I did also.
But now I don't know if I thought that he had it just because he stared at it for so long or because it actually looked like it was a home run off the bat. But regardless, we know that at this level, with this much at stake, you have to hustle out of the box. This isn't a hot take at all, right? You have to hustle out of the box. And it was disappointing to see that, you know, he was a little bit more concerned maybe with admiring the hard hit ball than he was
the single it turned out to be.
There you go. And I also understand that, you know, as obviously there's a throwing error that allows him to advance to second base. He was almost picked off there.
He was almost beat. It was a gamble.
It was, you know, the tag came very close,
yes.
Right?
It was a good slide.
It was a good slide for sure. And it was good hustle, even though it was delayed.
Too late. A little too late.
It was a little bit. But I guess with Vlad, it's like you can't really expect two wrongs to make a right every time. And and the fact is that he got lucky there. That
for
he,
sure.
That 100%. He wasn't tagged out.
Yeah.
Right.
And that the error even happened to begin with.
Correct. So, you know, John Schneider is saying after the game, listen, we hashed it out. It's all good. We spoke about it. The baseball gods were looking out for us, etc. The truth of the matter is that this is also not anything new necessarily. We have seen guys like Buck Martinez, even in the broadcast, sort of calling out Vlad for not hustling to say home plate on an RBI double by a teammate. And so I can understand the disappointment or the frustration of certain fans, even though Vlad had a tremendous game and really was a difference maker in the win.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays probably wouldn't have won if he wasn't in the lineup.
Yeah.
But it is understandable that there would be some frustration around, you know, on paper, your best player or one of your stars not hustling this late into the season with this much at stake. That said, Vlad is still Vlad, right? The way that he's been hitting the ball is extremely encouraging as the Blue Jays head into this final stretch. And if he heats up, then it does put the Blue Jays at another level, especially now that it seems like the pitching staff may be dealing with a little bit of fatigue, or maybe it was just the Coors Field effect. We don't know, but run support is more important now than it has been in the past from what we have seen from the pitching staff. And so if Vlad can heat up and continue to hit the way that he has, add a little bit of hustle to that, and the Blue Jays are probably going to be in a very, very good place.
Yeah, 3 home runs in the last 9 games for Guerrero. Obviously had that hit streak going at one point. A lot of one-hit games in there, but, you know, still counts for a streak, and ends up with a multi-hit game yesterday with that home run and then that awkward single. And I think Joe Siddle had mentioned it on the TV broadcast as well. And it certainly, I mean, it is an issue. I think I separated a bit. I think there are a lot of people who are like, why doesn't he run hard to first base on a routine ground ball to short? I think like 90% of major leaguers don't run hard to first base,
especially
on a routine grounder to short.
On August 33rd, right? Like it's, you're not gonna.
Yeah. And we had text comparing to, you know, like David Schneider hits the ball and sprints out every time. He's played 17 major league baseball games. I think there's a different expectation there. I think when guys first come up, they're trying to survive in major league baseball. They have to do that every single time. It's different for not just Vlad, but the majority of Blue Jays who I think, you know, on a routine ball like that don't, you know, end up running it, because you don't want to, you know, like Danny Jansen had a hamstring issue and stuff like that. You don't want to put yourself in a position on a play that's probably going to be made anyway. And he's not a fast guy who's going to leg out base hits. But I mean, we are getting texts right now, and you know, whether it's text from Brad or two others who didn't leave their name and location, text us 590-590, name and location, if you want us to shout you out. It's a lot of the same thing that you know, they need to either get him to correct this. You know, there was one text that says the team doesn't revolve around Vlad. I mean, no team revolves around any player entirely, or else you're the Los Angeles Angels and you don't win a lot of games. Ah. I would say a lot of the step back offensively this year, certainly, like, if he is even 2022 Vlad, this is a significantly better team. He's the three hitter, so like they do to a certain extent revolve offensively around him, but you know, they certainly need to get that hashed out. But for a lot of the calls, I think that we had gotten to bench him or anything, I'm just not sure A, that they can do that right now in the stretch that they're in. And like some people, frankly, and I just don't get this at all, saying that like thinking the team would be better if they threw in other guys for him right now. Yes. And they do not even remotely have nine hitters, even when healthy, better than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And certainly right now, they don't have nine hitters better. Like we talked about the young guys. It's great Ernie Clements hitting 450. Sure. If you look at last year, the year before that, you know, like there's a small sample size going on.
Certainly. And especially with Belt, a lot of, you know, Belt's health right now is a little bit up in the air, because we don't know when the lower back is going to flare up, when that is going to be an issue. We saw how late the notice was yesterday for his scratch in the lineup. And you're talking about, you know, not just a spot in the lineup, but also you're talking about first base. If Belt is not around to play first base, then do you put Cabin Biggio in there? Sure, he has been producing a little bit more, but you cannot seriously tell me that Biggio is going to produce in the same level of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I agree that the team doesn't revolve around Vlad, especially of late, but we also need to consider, like you said, Ben, that he is a number three hitter, and that is or four or whatever it may be, and that is it's pretty much a prime position here in the lineup. And he is Vlad Guerrero Jr. He is a guy who should drive a team, who should lead the way. And he wants to be that guy. He has spoken time and time again about wanting to be that guy in the absence of Bo Bichette, who had been sort of that driving force and the leader for most of the season. This is Vlad's team to lead. And that starts with hustling out of the box. I agree with you that you need to be smart. You're not going to want to run full speed in every ground ball. And when you talk about Davis Schneider, we also should remember that just a couple of weeks ago, he sat an entire week.
Yeah.
So he is well rested, right? It's not like
he's coming off his fourth consecutive season where he misses all but like one game.
Precisely. And so these are different situations for sure. And it tends to, you know, when the Blue Jays lose or when things aren't going necessarily well, that weight tends to be put on Vladdy a little bit more. And we also need to acknowledge that when he's on, he is a game changer. It's all about finding that balance between being smart and putting yourself in the best position.
A couple texts coming in, you know, saying it's not just the young guys, it's Kevin Kiermaier, Whit Merrifield who run. I mean, I do think there are a lot of times, frankly, that those guys hit ground balls and do jog, but I think they run more. But also I think that goes back to, how many infield hits do you think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would have if he sprinted every ground ball? Almost none. Like, legitimately, almost none. Kevin Kiermaier's still one of the faster guys in baseball. So is Whit Merrifield. So it's a whole different type of game. I'm not excusing what he did yesterday. No. That was not good.
No.
And that's what I'm trying to do. Separate those ground balls that I think sometimes people focus too much on. Yesterday, huge implications on running or not. You know you have a base hit. Extra bases are important. And that's a big deal. You brought up Belt. Before we get to a break here and talk to Zach, quickly, how concerning for you is Brandon Belt, given that, you know, he is currently the OPS leader on this team, Bo Bichette included?
That's kind of surprising, I guess. But it is surprising that he's ahead of Bo. But the truth of the matter is that he has been one of the most productive hitters in this lineup, which is why I think that this problem is a bit more concerning. It doesn't seem like he's going to necessarily need an IL stint or anything like that, which is good news because Blue Jays really can't afford to miss any more of those key pieces. But the unpredictability of this issue to me is what makes it a little bit concerning. Belt has been extremely productive. He has the plate approach is honestly one of the best on the team, right? He knows exactly what he's looking for. He's not going to get cheated. He's not going to swing at pitches outside the zone. And it's been really cool to watch his at-bats. I'm not going to lie. And it is a huge loss for the Blue Jays. Now, if he can keep off the IL and still give them, say, 3 or 4 games a week here down the stretch, then I think you're happy with that. These are the effects of a long season in a veteran guy that, you know, he has even spoken himself about not being as fast as he used to be or not being as athletic as he used to be. Excuse me. But if the Blue Jays can get 3 or 4 games out of him right now per week, I think they're going to be in a good position, especially if a guy like Spencer Horwitz, even if he cools off a little bit, can continue to contribute the way that he did yesterday. It's going to be fine. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he is immensely important to this team. Mm-hmm. I think that they, you know, especially in this window still where they have Oakland, Kansas City, I think they can survive. Right. But come Texas, I think you want Brandon Belt in that lineup. I'm not actually saying, even though his on-base plus slugging is higher than Bo, he's not having a better offensive season than Bo. I'm not actually saying that. However, you know, he has 16 home runs, which is right around the same number as a Springer, a Bo, a Dalton Varsho, a Danny Jansen. He gets on base as much as anyone on the team, and he's the guy that, you know, if you can get Bo off the IL on the minimum, that would be the 7th, which is an off day for the Blue Jays in between Oakland and KC. Like, you want Brandon Belt on base for when Bo Bichette hits a homer or when Vlad hits a homer. Like, you,
right.
He's helped set it up, even if he's not the quickest runner, obviously. He's the guy who sets them up a lot. So I do think he's really important, and for the Blue Jays, the hope is to get him back soon. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, Zach Werden, writer for Sportsnet.ca, associate editor with Sportsnet, will join us on the other side. Blue Jays and Oakland Athletics starting a series today, and we're going to talk about it a whole lot more. This is Jays Talk Plus. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fresh views on everything in the National Football League. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jays Talk Plus continues on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, or wherever you get your favorite podcast. That's I've Got a Hole Where My Heart Should Be by The Sheepdogs.
Great
I'm Ben
choice.
Schulman. Thank you. I was listening to it in the car down. It was a great drive. She's Julia Kreutz, Nick Blackmore, Tristan Markajani, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes. It was an awesome drive today. Happy Labor Day again if you didn't join us in the first half hour. I live in the greater Toronto area, so when you get a morning like this where everyone's asleep and the DVP is just
it's amazing.
Wide open. Oh,
that's
it's
the
my
stuff.
Favorite.
It's not favorite. Not common, so you
no,
really have to savor it when it happens.
It is not common at all. Zach Werden, associate editor with Sportsnet, is going to join us in a moment. The Blue Jays open up a huge series today with not the worst team in baseball after their sweep of the Angels over the weekend. The second worst team in baseball, the Oakland Athletics at Oco Coliseum. That will go on at 4:07 p.m. Eastern. It'll be Jose Berríos against Ken Waldichuk and just a huge, huge series for the Blue Jays coming off what was, you know, it's the Colorado Rockies, but a huge win yesterday.
For sure.
And we had talked a lot about it before we talked to Zach. We were going to talk about the pitching in the first half, but got a little bit caught up with Vladdy. The Blue Jays do win 2 of 3. However, they did not have really a single clean pitching performance in this series. They end up giving up 22 runs in 3 games. I know it's Colorado. How much do you write that off? And what reasons do you look for that the Blue Jays one of the best pitching teams in baseball, really had to rely upon their offense to win two out of these three games.
Yeah, it is a little surprising, but then again, when you get to Coors, it is obviously something that you would expect to happen a little bit more. You are going to allow a little bit more offense just because of the conditions. It does, however, sort of put into the spotlight, let's say, the workload of this starting rotation, which is way up there with one of the highest workloads for a pitching staff in all of Major League Baseball. So we may continue to see maybe the effects of fatigue a little bit. We know that Jose Berríos, who is going tonight, didn't necessarily have the greatest month of August. He is very much looking for a bounce back starting today. Today rather than tonight, right?
Yeah.
It's a matinee.
2 day games on a West Coast trip. You'll take that.
Absolutely, you will. Especially us, right?
Yes.
It is nice to see for a change. But is workload a concern here? Because we know that they have been up there in innings. I believe Chris Bassitt is at the maybe top five in innings pitched. Kevin Gausman is up there. So is Jose Berríos and Kikuchi to a lesser extent. Obviously, you have Hyunjin Ryu now, who seems to be sort of is still on a little bit of a pitch limit, or maybe the Blue Jays are just being extremely careful with him. The truth of the matter is that he's been pitching very, very effectively, but we have not seen him, I believe, even get an out in the sixth inning. He has pitched into the sixth a couple times, but not really long starts by a guy who seems to be pretty sharp. So that is a development that is worth monitoring as well, because if you are bringing in the bullpen, especially after a series like we just saw in Colorado, in which the Blue Jays really had to rely on their bullpen, and you see Jimmy Garcia sort of struggling a little bit, you have to bring in Jordan Romano because Chad Green was, he bounced back yesterday, I will say that. But his first outing as a Blue Jay was far from perfect. I believe four earned runs for him in that ninth inning. The Blue Jays have relied quite heavily on their pitching, and now is really the time where the run support needs to come into play as well, because very clearly, if this is the time to click, this is the time to click, and it's going to take a full effort here.
Well, to expand upon that more, we have Zach Werden on the line on Jays Talk Plus, associate editor with Sportsnet, writer for Just Baseball, and host of the Bird's Eye View podcast. Zach, really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning to you as well, and happy Labor Day. And we were talking about some of the starting pitching. Obviously, not the greatest day yesterday for Kevin Gausman. His quotes featured heavily in the piece that you put on Sportsnet.ca yesterday. Do you think it was at least, like, he was talking so glowingly about the Buffalo guys, a big relief for him to finally get some run support in a start where he doesn't really have his best stuff?
Yeah, he's just like the rest of us, talking glowingly about the Buffalo guys at this point. It's been nice to see him kind of get some help the last couple times out. While he's been going through some of these struggles, you know, he kind of gave the team so much to begin the season and through the middle parts of the season when the offense really wasn't giving him all that much in return. So seeing him being able to get kind of some help on the other side is a really encouraging sign, I would say, for a Blue Jays team that has really needed to give their starters some offensive help. And, you know, I think you guys were just talking about kind of the workload. And for him, it was really interesting yesterday before the game, hearing them say that he was adjusting his workload in between starts, kind of taking off bullpens and trying to figure out exactly kind of the best way to get himself in prime pitching condition on his days that he starts. So kind of with that, I think it'll be interesting to see him going forward and see, obviously he's been around for a long time, so being able to see what he figures out in terms of a workload for himself, it'll be interesting to see if he's able to kind of get back to that early season form instead of kind of, you know, it hasn't been his best stuff the last couple times out. So if he's able to really manage that workload a little bit better and find himself in a groove heading into the playoffs, I think that would be great for the Blue Jays.
Zach, thanks for doing this. Staying on Kevin Gausman for a little bit, we have spoken about him in sort of a Cy Young light. How do you feel about, say, these past couple of starts, the fact that he has to maybe adjust his workload a little bit? We have seen that the early season form is not necessarily there. How do you like his chances for the Cy Young here, and how do you see that competition overall?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to write anybody off based on a couple starts for sure. I think he's right in the mix. I know Garrett Cole seems to kind of be the betting favorite at this point. Kind of he has the, you know, topped, not top in the AL in the ERA, but kind of at the top there. I think if you really kind of look at it though, Gausman, you know, he leads all American League pitchers in F WAR, and kind of going on, you know, some of the advanced stats there, like he has a really good case. But if you do look at just kind of the consistency that he's maybe missed the last couple times out, it is going to be tough looking at the final numbers in terms of which way voters are going to go. I know, obviously, you know, you kind of look at the way that voters vote now, and it's definitely changed a little bit. I don't think, you know, the win-loss record really is going to matter all that much. But for a guy who strikes out as many guys as Gausman does, and how dominant that he was through the beginning months of the season, and just how important that he's been to a Blue Jays team that, you know, is doing a little bit better than the Yankees, I think he has a really solid case of being right in the mix of that Cy Young conversation again.
Yeah, that will be really interesting to follow. If I were a betting man, I might sprinkle just a tiny bit on Sonny Gray as well, who continues to pitch very well for the Minnesota Twins, and actually leads the American League in ERA right now. Going over to the other side, in that Colorado series, obviously the talk of the town is the Buffalo guys. Outside of Davis Schneider, who has now been with the Blue Jays for a while, generally, you know, what were your expectations for a guy like Horwitz or Clement in this stretch, and have they exceeded them? Like, what did you see from them that you liked or didn't like over this series?
Yeah, I would say my expectations were certainly not what they've given the Blue Jays over the past couple of games. I think their approach has really been the most encouraging sign for a team that has kind of had maybe a couple approach issues this season. And, you know, kind of seeing Clement and Horwitz come up and provide, you know, both on-base ability and power has been really big for a team, you know, without Bichette, Chapman, and Jansen. Having them come up and be able to provide that on-base ability and kind of that consistent line drive approach has been something that I maybe saw from them in Buffalo, but wasn't necessarily sure if it would translate to the major league level. And obviously, just when you're not getting to your power as a hitter, if you're able to find your way on base and put together solid at-bats in between the times when you're driving the ball, that's really what makes elite hitters. So seeing them being able to provide that has been really big. And, you know, I think at this point we almost have to find a nickname for these Buffalo guys. You know, they all come up and have kind of sparked the team here. And if you told any of us that back in May or June, I think we would have called anybody crazy to say that Ernie Clement, Spencer Horowitz, and Davis Schneider would be leading this team into September here.
That's so true, and pretty wild to think about, especially again for a team that is vying for a postseason spot here. You wouldn't necessarily tab the youngsters as a big contributing factor, but the truth of the matter is that they have been. Keegan Mathieson actually yesterday in his reporting of the game wrote in the Buffalo Boys, which I like for the alliteration.
Yeah, it's Buffalo Bunch.
There you go. That's nice, yeah. Too. Some alliteration is always welcome. But, Zach, wondering, we have seen Schneider absolutely rake, and I at least keep expecting him to cool down a little bit. It's just not happening, right? But obviously these are still small sample sizes. Which of these guys do you think has the most sustainable, let's say, streak? And conversely, which of these guys do you expect to cool off in the near future here?
Yeah, I really like the Buffalo Bunch. I'll chime in on that one. I think, you know, seeing Schneider kind of have, you know, kept this up for almost a month now, it's kind of got to be him in terms of being the most sustainable. You know, obviously, we did see him kind of go to the bench for a little bit in the middle of August and come back and just kind of can stay hot, which is maybe a little bit surprising, but for him, I think he's the guy that I would pick as the guy who's able to keep it up the longest just based on what we've seen. I do wonder if his kind of sustained success is something that might rub off on these other two guys, you know, if Ernie and Spencer don't look at him and saying, you know, he's been able to stay hot for a couple months in the majors. Why can't why can't I do that for this September? So, if I did have to pick someone to cool off, I mean, I would perhaps lean Ernie Clement just in terms of, you know, the quality of contact that both him and Horwitz make. But, you know, I think if you kind of look at what Clement has been doing these past few games, it is really encouraging that there actually might be something in there that can prove to be a little bit more than he's been at the major league level leading into this season.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, for Clement's sake, he's probably the guy, despite some errors coming in game two, who looks to be the most valuable defensively of the three right now. He, obviously hit at a very high level contact-wise in AAA. Horwitz did as well, probably walked a little bit more, but Ernie playing some more valuable positions for the Blue Jays. Yesterday, not playing a defensive position, but DHing. Vladdy stole the show in a lot of ways. It was kind of the Buffalo discussion and the Vladdy discussion, and we just talked about it at length. Mostly we probably didn't get enough to the fact that he did end up driving in two runs, scoring two times, and had a home run for the Blue Jays. But he also had that unfortunate play where he doesn't hustle out of the box, doesn't make it to second base when he really should have been running, and therefore has to rely upon an error in a really close play to make that 90 feet up. Just what did you think overall of just a really weird game from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last night?
Yeah, there's been a few really weird games for him this season. But base running mistake aside, I would say that it was a positive step forward for him yesterday. You kind of see him get the head out on some balls, drive them, pull them. You know, everybody's been crying for him to pull the baseball a little bit more. So seeing him actually do that yesterday on some inside pitches and being able to get some stuff going to left field, I think it was a really positive step forward for him. Just the quality of that bats kind of felt a little bit better too. Obviously all the concern with him this season, you know, the recent stretch has actually been pretty good. Obviously he had the hit streak and has obviously gotten to his power a little bit more. Over the past couple of weeks, he's actually been last in Major League Baseball in Fangraph's clutch metrics. So while the results have gotten better, that's obviously where a lot of the frustration comes from, just in terms of the situational hitting where he isn't coming through. So seeing him actually get, you know, two RBIs yesterday, drive a couple baseballs, I think it was a really positive step forward for him.
Yeah, that's a good point for sure. It's also interesting to sort of analyze that clutch factor, right? And see where it is coming from for the Blue Jays, and is it coming from where you would expect it to? Maybe not necessarily. Zach, you recently wrote also about the wild card teams and their schedules. Speaking of clutch and speaking of a stretch run here, how do you sort of analyze, or how do you assess the Blue Jays' schedule moving forward, and where does that put them in their chances here of making that big push for a postseason spot?
Yeah, they do, by opponent win percentage, have the second easiest schedule of all the teams in the AL wild card race other than the Astros. Obviously that's boosted by kind of this stretch here against, you know, the Rockies, the A's, and the Royals. But seeing them kind of have that easier schedule, I think, is a really positive sign for the rest of the season. Obviously, a team like the Yankees maybe has more talent than their record would suggest, especially seeing them kind of sweep the Astros yesterday. They also have a really great advantage kind of being able to play the Rangers, I think. I think if the Rangers had such an easy schedule like the Astros, that would be more difficult to kind of catch them, where you actually get to play the team who has a tougher schedule and get to make up ground that way. The Astros and Rangers both have, you know, they play this week, which is going to be a really big series, a chance for the Blue Jays to gain ground on whoever doesn't win that series, if the Blue Jays can take care of business in Oakland. And neither of those teams have actually been playing all that well. Obviously Houston being swept by the Yankees, Texas losing their series to Minnesota. So it's really a case of where the Blue Jays just need to take advantage of their easy schedule while they have it this next week, before they really get into kind of the big matchups over the last couple of weeks.
Ben and I are going to talk amongst ourselves about this a little bit later, but just to set it up, I did want to ask you, for the Blue Jays, how would you want, let's say, if you were the Blue Jays, how would you want this series between Texas and Houston to go here in order to maximize your postseason potential?
I think an Astros sweep would be huge for the Blue Jays. If they can, because say the Astros sweep and the Blue Jays win their series, then they would come close, if not overpass the Rangers there. And, or I guess they would overpass them. So if they can be ahead of the Rangers heading into that four-game series at home next week, I think that would be a really huge boost for the Blue Jays, having the Rangers chasing them instead of the other way around. Just kind of watching the Rangers to their series against the Twins, they were not able to keep a lead at all. They've been having some major bullpen issues, and I'm not sure, based on, you know, Houston coming off a sweep against the Yankees, if they're really going to be able to take all that much advantage of it. But I do really think that if the Blue Jays can at least catch the Rangers heading into that series next week, that they will have a really great chance of surpassing them and eventually making the playoffs.
For those who haven't checked the standings this morning, Blue Jays a game and a half back of both teams. So if there's a sweep in either direction, the Blue Jays just have to beat the Athletics in the series to get into wild card positioning. If there isn't a sweep, but the Blue Jays sweep the A's, then they'll be in wild card positioning no matter what happens in Texas in that series between the Astros and Rangers. Talking with Zach Worden, associate editor with Sportsnet, I think it was kind of revealed in the answer of that question, but who do you think is the most catchable team right now? Because certainly Texas is faltering, but like you said, Houston, I mean, that's the Yankees are more talented than their record, but it's still pretty brutal to get swept by a team that's more than likely not even going to finish close to the playoff picture at home, like the Astros just did.
Yeah, I think in terms of most catchable, it definitely kind of has to be Texas. They have the series against the Blue Jays. They have this series coming up against the Astros, and then they have seven remaining against the Mariners too, which could almost make or break their season in terms of just how good Seattle has been. They also, you know, have three against the red hot A's. They have three against the Guardians who are now, I guess they've always been trying to win, but have, you know, made some additions down the stretch at the waiver deadline there. And, you know, they're 4-12 over their last 16 and really struggling. They've lost a bunch of pieces. So I think that if there is a team to catch, it is going to kind of be the Rangers here.
Zach, a lot of talk around, you know, records, especially with the American League East as strong as it has been. And this wild card race really coming down to the wire here. It's going to be a fun one to watch. But do you think that 90 wins would be enough to put the Blue Jays in playoff position? And if you sort of had to, maybe project here the type of record that would guarantee a postseason spot, what would you come up with?
It's a great question. I'm not sure if 90 wins would get them there exactly. I think, you know, they're 75-62 right now, so they would have to go 15-10 the rest of the way to get to 90, which is definitely more than achievable, I would say, for this Blue Jays team in terms of having six games remaining against the A's and the Royals, having three against the Red Sox, who have kind of fallen off a little bit. If I had to predict a record that you, a win total that you should be aiming for, I almost think like the 92-93 mark might be the place where they need to get to in terms of kind of being able to claim a spot and really be comfortable there. I know, like, last, you look at the playoffs last year, and the Rays made it with 86 wins, which is crazy to think that a team could get there not reaching the 90 win mark. So maybe it is possible, but just the quality of the teams this year, I really think that you are going to have to get to a 91 or a 92 to secure a spot there.
Yeah, I think last year there was a little more middle class in the American League. Like, it's kind of like the National League this year, where there's teams three games above 500 that are in wild card positioning right now, as the Blue Jays double digit games above 500 are on the outside. Last one for you. Big fan of just baseball, and actually happened to be I went to school with Jack McMullen, who's obviously a big part of just baseball as well. So I saw you wrote a piece about Canadian Edouard Julien flying under the radar a little bit in his, you know, 86 game rookie season so far. What have you thought about him as one of the most exciting young Canadian players in baseball?
Yeah, I think he's been awesome in terms of a guy who, you know, really showed out for Canada at the World Baseball Classic. He led the entire tournament in OPS back in March there. And just the way that he's been able to kind of come up and be a spark plug for this Twins team that really hasn't gotten the offensive contributions that they thought they would from their stars. You know, Carlos Correa struggled. Byron Buxton hasn't necessarily been an option for them. So kind of having this offensive second baseman who gets on base as much as Julien does is a really cool sign for Canadian baseball. I think him continuing the success off that World Baseball Classic and carrying that into his season with the Twins has been, you know, huge for the Twins, who are of course leading the division right now, but have needed offensive contributions from wherever they can get it. And he has cooled off over the last couple of weeks, but he is a guy who comes up with an elite approach, an elite feel for the strike zone. I think he's 100th percentile in chase rate. He's kind of got that Juan Soto control of the zone, and he's really been able to do some damage when he does get his pitch in the zone. So I think it's been a really encouraging sign for him and for Canadian baseball, just the way that he's gotten off to his major league career this year.
Julian, again, only 86 games, and he's fourth among Twins position players in Baseball Reference WAR right now. So really interesting to see what he does and some other great young Canadian players like Bo Naylor and others do for the remainder of the season. Zach, really appreciate you joining us and giving us the lowdown on the Jays and everything else.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on. Have a great rest of the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Zach Worden, associate editor with Sportsnet, writer for Just Baseball, and host of the Bird's Eye View podcast. We were talking those nicknames, and I think we were beaten in general by one of the texters. Didn't leave a name and location. So if you want to text us with maybe some of your favorite nicknames for the group of Buffalo players that are up and contributing for the Blue Jays, 590-590, name and location in the text. But the Herd was what they suggested. And
that's good stuff.
I do know, like, the Herd is, you know, like there's at least, you know, a media publication covering stuff in Buffalo called The Herd. I do think that could easily be like the voting winner if a poll were to be put.
What a masterpiece by Anonymous.
Yeah. Thank you, Anonymous. Really appreciate it. And thank you, Nick Blackmore, for my severe upgrade in the headphones, by the way. Just a complete turnaround thanks to our producer today. And we are now with both ears working, headed into the second hour in just a moment. We're going to take a step aside. When we come back, we're going to talk about all those teams around the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, of course, need to win. We know who they're playing. We'll talk a bit about the Athletics as well, but we're going to talk some more Seattle, some more Houston, some more Texas, and a little bit of everything else when we return. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. This is Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360, wherever you get your podcasts and across the Sportsnet radio network.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus on Sportsnet 360, wherever you get your podcasts, streaming on the Sportsnet app and across the Sportsnet radio network. That's West Coast by Lana Del Rey. I got that right.
You got it right. I mean, you got to pick the song.
Yeah.
Last break, so figured I would get us in the mood for this Oakland A's series.
I just had to confirm because during the All-Star break, I misnamed Beyonce's hit song "Single Ladies."
Oh, yeah.
So I can't be too sure. I'm Ben Schulman. She's Julia Kreutz. Tristan Markajani, Nick Blackmore, Jennifer Rolnick behind the scenes for Jays Talk Plus. Second hour here on Labor Day. Blake Murphy has the Labor Day weekend off. And while we were at break, a text coming in about potential Buffalo guys contributing nicknames for the whole group.
Let's hear them.
So we had talked about the Bison Boys, Bison Bunch. The Herd was brought up. I will say Paul from Toronto texting in. The Herd is like a nickname that he says they constantly just use for the Bisons.
Fair
so
enough.
Maybe it shouldn't be repurposed in this situation. Who knows? We have the Buffalo Boost from Charlie Timmons. I like that. Wing Force, Damien in Mississauga. I really like that.
Wow.
Because, like, Buffalo Wings.
All right.
Dylan from Kitchener doesn't have a group name, but he thinks that Spencer Horwitz could be, like, Spenny Horror Show, which I like. I do like that a lot. Bob and Ajax, the Buffalo Ballers. I'm into it. A little basketball-y, but I'm into it. Bison Boost, like Buffalo Boost. Kristen Athens texted that in. And then I really like this one. Bob, trucking through Northwest Texas, by the way. So I appreciate you streaming from Northwest Texas. The Big Bat Bisons.
All right.
And that's like alliteration is good. And if you can get it in three.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah.
I would say that's the winner.
Or maybe
for me.
The Big Bad Bisons. Like, I think there's a couple ways you can go with it.
Wow. You even have a little bit of a pun there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, Buffalo Bisons players turned Blue Jays contributing a lot yesterday, will more than likely contribute a lot, or at least be put in a position to do that today when the Blue Jays take on the Oakland Athletics in a series opener starting at 4:07 Eastern, 1:07 local. Jose Berríos against Ken Waldichuk in that game. The Blue Jays, 13 games above 500, 75-62. They go up against the Oakland Athletics, the second worst team in baseball by record, past the Kansas City Royals yesterday. And the Blue Jays, a game and a half back of both Texas and Houston. They also gained a game on Seattle yesterday, so they are 2.5 back on the Seattle Mariners, although they don't hold the tiebreaker. So in a way, they're kind of 3.5 back. They have to finish ahead of Seattle, whereas they have the tiebreaker on Houston. It's yet to be decided about Texas. All of that is to say, when you look at this race, we ask Zach, we'll more than likely ask Kyle Glazer as well coming up at 11:30, because it's all people can think about right now. You look at these teams in the AL West, who's the team that if you're the Blue Jays, you have your sights on?
That's a fascinating question. And it's also very interesting that if you were to list those teams, it would probably be the three AL West teams here, right?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that the Tampa Bay Rays are in play here. I don't think that is a possibility. But when you look at the AL West teams, first of all, that race is completely in the open still, right? We have no idea who's going to win that division. We obviously saw the Mariners go on that amazing run that they did to sort of reclaim the top spot. The Astros have been struggling a bit. The Rangers have been struggling a lot. And so not only is the wild card race very interesting, but the AL West race is going to be a fascinating one to watch as well. If you're the Blue Jays, you would probably want the Mariners to just run away with it because of the tiebreaker, and that, you know, taking 3 out of 4 against Texas when they come into town would put the Blue Jays in a really, really good position to make the wild card there. I would say that based on the way that these teams are playing right now, I do think that Texas is a little bit easier to catch up to, because you can never really count out the Houston Astros. They have the pieces in place, let's say, to come out of this skid a little bit. And honestly, they do, I believe, have what it takes to still finish atop that division. Maybe not this year. Maybe this will be the year that the Mariners will finally overcome the Astros. But we know how good of a team they are, and we know how well they perform down the stretch as well. And so if you're the Blue Jays, you're probably focusing a little bit more on Texas. It can change based on how this series between these two teams goes right now. The Rangers and the Astros, I believe, today start a series.
Yes.
And so that there will be developments, and things can change very, very quickly when obviously two postseason contenders face each other. But based on the way that the Rangers bullpen has been performing of late, the fact that the starting rotation isn't as dominant anymore as it was to start the year. Jordan Montgomery struggled in his last start. I believe there might be an issue with Max Scherzer.
He got lifted early from his last start, and they said forearm tightness, which is like the scariest two words a pitching coach has ever heard in his life.
And so if you're the Blue Jays, you're probably focusing a little bit more on the Rangers, having a series against them coming up. You can control it a little bit more. We spoke a little bit about who is more, let's say, exposed between the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros. And I would even throw in the Seattle Mariners, who just lost a series to the Mets here as well.
True.
What would you say, what would the Blue Jays need to focus on here in terms of putting themselves, let's say, in the best position to make the postseason?
Yeah, I think it's Texas. Like, at the end of the day, I think the head-to-head matchup is big, and the bullpen struggles are really big. The Texas Rangers avoided a sweep yesterday with a walk-off win. Adolis Garcia hit a huge homer. I really like watching him. It was a lot of fun. They blew two separate late game leads to make that walk-off possible. Like, they just cannot keep water from getting in the boat when their bullpen comes into the game. And then you mentioned the starters taking a step back. They've dealt with some health situations. I think for the Astros, they've had some rough starts. They have had some starters definitely take a step back. You're looking at a much different season from Christian Javier than a lot of people expected. Hunter Brown, certainly from the early season surge, has taken a bit of a step back. But that's still a team who I think is really well set up, and they're getting healthier. I think that they've recently, you know, brought Brantley back, which is massive, brought Alvarez back, although the really scary play yesterday where he kind of falls into the wall, but he, I believe, ended up being okay in that game. And Altuve's had an incomplete season, but when you have him healthy, he's maybe, other than Yordan Alvarez, just about the best player that you're going to have in that lineup. So I think Houston, I honestly feel like Houston's probably going to win the division if I had to pick it.
Yeah.
I don't think you can count on the Mariners to be even remotely as hot as they were in August. They weren't like that for any other month that season, even close to it. And obviously the health situations with Julio Rodriguez certainly plays a major factor in what the Mariners are going to do. They have a tough series, by the way, opening up in Cincinnati coming up today at 4:10. But I think with the Rangers not having the experience the Astros do, or even the Mariners do, I think the Rangers have some of the age that the Mariners don't, but this Mariners team together made the playoffs last year. This is a new group together, even if lots of different guys bring experience from other places for the Rangers, and really the bullpen at the end of the day. I think it's really, really tough to stick in a race when you don't have anything reliable going on past the sixth inning. Like, their offense has taken a bit of a step back. One of my favorite rookies, Josh Young, broke his thumb on a freak play where a ball just hit his glove in an awkward spot. And he was huge for them, playing like great defense at third and hitting in the middle of the order. They've had a lot of different guys take a bit of a step back for them offensively. Corey Seager's been great. Obviously, Garcia has the hit yesterday, but some of the guys around Seager have not hit as well as they were before. I think the Rangers are quite exposed right now. I think that there's a big chance that they could get skipped, which is crazy because, you know, certainly when we did the shows during the All-Star break and even for weeks after that, I would have said the Rangers have an incredibly strong chance to make the championship series in the American League, and it has gone sideways fast.
Certainly. It's interesting to contrast that with the notion of, all you have to do to sort of win a World Series is get into the playoffs.
For sure.
Now, if there's a very, very strong chance that the Texas Rangers will make the playoffs, right? If they can eke out a couple of wins and get lucky in other scenarios, even though they're not playing their best baseball. Now, is that enough to say, hey, if the Rangers go in, they're going to win the World Series, or they have a chance to win the World Series? That is tough, because obviously they are not performing at even the postseason level right now.
No.
And it would be, honestly, kind of a loss to the game and to the competitive process if a team with a bullpen this leaky and with the starting rotation issues, if they continue, if a team like that were to make the playoffs and say perhaps a more deserving team such as the Blue Jays or the Mariners didn't, right? So it's a funny thing to sort of analyze, like, when do teams get hot and when do they not, and how does that impact the quality of baseball that's being played in October?
And we're still kind of waiting for the Blue Jays to get hot at in this season. But we had asked, and I think it's definitely worth discussing, we'd asked Zach about this, but the series coming up, so he had said a Houston sweep, which is interesting because if the Blue Jays sweep the A's, which is no guarantee. They did not sweep them when they played them in Toronto, and that was first half of the season. But if the Blue Jays sweep the A's, then two out of three games either way would still put the Blue Jays in playoff position. However, if you don't think the Astros are catchable or would be really tough to catch, then I think you would end up subscribing to Zach's theory. So what would you, not knowing what the Blue Jays are going to do, obviously, what would you root for if you were taking on a Blue Jays fan mind here in this Texas Houston series?
Yeah, I wouldn't get, I guess, as greedy as sort of choosing the sweep or who sweeps. I think a sweep on either side.
Okay. So you just want someone to get knocked back.
That would be the ideal scenario for the Blue Jays. That said, I don't believe that either of these teams will sweep. I do think it's going to be a little bit more of an even series, especially with both teams playing with so much on the line, right? For the Astros, though, I think it's quite simple. I think they need more contributions from their actual players and fewer contributions from fans in the stands.
Yes, that was not a positive contribution yesterday. If you were tuned into Sunday Night Baseball, there was a ball – hit to the left field corner foul territory. I believe it was Cabrera in left for the Yankees.
Right on.
And he was going over to make what would have been a really, really difficult play. He leaped up to make the catch, and a fan in Houston at Minute Maid Park reached over the stands significantly, deflected the ball. So the batter, I truthfully forget who it is. I could probably find it. It was Yordan Alvarez. Gets called out because of a fan. However, I do think that he saved some face. ESPN went over to talk to him. Here's what went down between ESPN's Buster Olney and the fan who tried to reach out into the stands.
So tell us about that play and how it developed.
So pretty much I'm out here with my son. This is our first ever game. We just moved here to Houston literally in January. And I just wanted to make the moment special for him. As a father, I feel like it's my job to make sure that I give him the best moments. I apologize to the Astro organization. I didn't know it from, y'all gotta understand, when it's dropping down, it looked like it's coming directly to you. So I reached and my body went for what I know. But we did have a wonderful moment.
Okay, so you reach out, and what was the reaction that you heard right after the play was over?
The reaction was shock, disgust, happiness, sweat, a little bit of lust, baby. You feel me? I was in there feeling kind of hurt, but my fingers still shaking a little bit. The ball way heavier with the gravity. I'm not going to lie to you. Charlie Ray, we're going to be on TV, baby!
That's awesome. I mean, I'm not a fan of fans reaching into the stands and impacting the game, but you could really quickly turn around how I feel about you by putting together that 45-second stretch on national TV in the U.S. and internationally around the world. That guy, I mean, I truthfully don't know. Like, I believe when you reach into the stands, they take you out of the game.
Right,
I thought that's
right
what they do, because it's, like, not allowed. But that guy seems like he is so enjoyable to talk to that maybe the security came up and he just apologized and made them laugh, and they were like, all right, well, he was trying to get a ball for his son. I understand the emotion, even if I don't support the action.
Listen, he apologized to the Astros organization. You can't kick that guy out. Also, the ball is a lot heavier with gravity is one of the best.
Phenomenal.
The best baseball quotes I've ever seen in my life. It's incredible stuff.
Phenomenal. That went down as the Yankees completed a sweep over the Houston Astros yesterday. Don't look now. The Yankees have won 6 of 7 games. Jason Dominguez became, I believe, the first Yankee to hit two home, or the youngest Yankee to hit two home runs in his first 3 games. And with two home runs in his 20s, I at least heard on the from Roxy Bernstein of ESPN on the radio broadcast yesterday that he's now second all time in home runs by a 20-year-old for the Yankees. They don't do that all that often. But the Yankees are a game back of 500. You look at them, you look at the Red Sox heading more in the other direction. Do you still think that these teams are even remotely kind of alive and in the mix? Or for you at this point, are the Yankees and Red Sox more just playing it out?
We have seen the Yankees more than once put together, say, an 11-game win streak and surprise everyone. Do I think this is going to happen this time around? I think it's extremely difficult, especially based on how the past month or so has gone for the Yankees. I realize that this is a hot stretch, and that's bad news for the Blue Jays if the Yankees can keep it up, because there is a remaining series against New York on the Blue Jays' schedule.
Remaining series.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
And one against the Red Sox?
1 Red Sox, 2 Yankees, 2 Rays.
So that is going to be a legitimately fascinating stretch, right? This, you can never count out any AL East team. I do think that the Orioles are in a good position to win the division here, but the Rays are coming in strong as well. Do I think the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs? No. I do, however, think that they're going to make the Blue Jays' life extremely difficult down the stretch. It's Yankees like, let's say, to see sort of this outburst of production and the win streak and all of that. The Yankees have been known of late for putting together sort of those runs. I do think it's a bit too late to sort of mount a comeback, especially being under 500 right now. If I'm not mistaken.
One game under.
It is going to be extremely hard when you have you're Cole on the mound every 5 days. And when you have a rookie like Dominguez producing the way that he is, and if Aaron Judge can stay healthy again, you can never really count them out. It is pretty much as long a shot as you could have for the New York Yankees, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, 8.5 games back, about 25 games to go. It's not ideal. I don't think that they have much of a shot. It is worth noting, at least, you know, a lot of watching on just like, but the Yankees have so much history, and obviously right baseball on. Is obsessed with history anyway, but have they finished below 500 in the last 30 years? No. You have to go back to 1992 for the last time that the Yankees were a below 500 club. The Blue Jays are the team currently with the best record that the Yankees will play for the rest of the season. They do not have a difficult September at all. They play Detroit at home and Milwaukee at home coming up. Series, a four-gamer in Fenway, which kind of feels like if the Yankees are still playing well, they'll kind of take the Red Sox out of it. And if the Red Sox are playing even okay, they'll kind of take the Yankees out of it. They go to Pittsburgh, home versus Blue Jays, home versus Arizona, on the road at Rogers Center, and then on the road at Kansas City. So I would bet on the fact that the Yankees, I think, are going to finish above 500. I don't think that this is going to be quite the below 500 catastrophe that maybe it looked to be, and maybe even a record that looks just pretty enough to kind of keep some people in places that could have been in jeopardy before. That we don't know about. The Red Sox, they're still hanging around. Like, it is, again, possible. They'd have to make a lot of noise, I think, in the Blue Jays series coming up. Red Sox are also at the Trop right now for a three-gamer, and that's no fun for anyone.
No
so
fun.
I do.
The Blue Jays will be the first to tell you that.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Playing at the Trop is no fun.
Does not go well. And by the way, I mean, I definitely did. I don't remember what your take was, but we did the show all of All-Star Break, and I was like, the Rays are just too injured at a certain mm-hmm. point here. And I can't believe I became like the 4 millionth person to fall into that trap. But I was like, they just can't keep it up. And the Rays are in the AL East race. Like, they're not just atop the wild card. They are absolutely in this race still with a chance to win the division. They're 2.5 games back of the Orioles. Do you still feel confident, though, the Orioles wrap up the division, even with the Felix Bautista injury?
I do. I think that what the Rays have accomplished without Shane McClanahan, without Wander Franco, it's nothing short of remarkable. But as you look down the stretch, and in terms of consistency, in terms of just the health of the lineup, really, I do think that this is still the Orioles' division. The pitching side is also something that you and I spoke a little bit about during that All-Star break. The Orioles are not phenomenal, right, pitching-wise. It is more of a run support type of deal for them, but yeah. I do think that they have done enough that if they just maintain a steady level of production here in September, this should be their division to lose. I do have a sort of a hot hypothetical for
okay.
you.
Okay, let's hear it.
Actually, it's more like a would you rather, if you will. You can only pick one of these. Which would be more shocking?
Okay. Right?
The Blue Jays don't make the playoffs, or the Yankees finish below 500.
I think with the Yankees' current schedule coming up, like, I think the Yankees will be at least 500 by the time we get to Thursday, and
right
I think
on.
They could be above. So I would say, just given the whole seasonal expectations for the Blue Jays, yeah. I think it would be more shocking for them to miss the playoffs entirely, because at least in defense of the Yankees, the Blue Jays are obviously pretty hurt right now. But the Yankees could not have had worse injury luck in a lot of ways than they did this year. Whether it be Carlos Rodon to start the season, whether it be, you know, Nestor Cortez, Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo's been out for an extended period. There always seems to be some lingering stuff in and around Giancarlo Stanton. Like, they're playing a lot of guys right now. It's gotten a little bit better with the call-ups, but they were playing a lot of guys a couple weeks ago that they did not intend to play or maybe even be on the New York Yankees this year. And obviously Tampa Bay has just persevered past what you could argue is even worse injuries.
Certainly.
But I don't think that that means that the Yankees should be punished for not pulling the Rays rabbit out of a hat. I think that the Blue Jays have less reason to explain not making the playoffs than the Yankees do finishing below 500. However, you know, like history, the Blue Jays have only made the playoffs. They made it fewer than 10 times. The Yankees haven't finished below 500 in 30 years. So some, I think, could definitely look at that and say it'd be more shocking for the Yankees, who most picked to win this division this year still. I think a lot of people around here were optimistic about the Blue Jays, but I think a lot of people had the Yankees to win the division, and they are pretty much earmarked for the basement of the division.
I can't wait to see how this turns out.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Really fun races going on. I'm just going to rapid fire you quickly here. AL West, who do you think wins the AL West?
The Houston Astros.
Okay. Do you have the Guardians fighting with the Twins? They're 5 games back right now.
I do. I think.
You think they could pass them?
No.
Okay.
I do think they'll make it interesting, though.
Okay.
I covered the Cleveland Guardians when they were in town, and it's an exciting team. Honestly, it is.
Yeah. They also added a lot with the waiver pickups, which is nice for them. The Cubs 3.5 back of the Brewers. You think there's anything interesting there? Or you think the Brewers kind of hold on by a little bit as they usually do?
I think so. It would be cool, but I think that's that.
And then 4 teams, only 3 games above 500, tied for the final wild card spot in the National League: Miami, San Francisco, Arizona, Cincinnati. I'm assuming you like the Cubs and Phillies more than all 4 of those teams. I could be wrong, or do you not?
I mean, with the Phillies, it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I do think I like them more than these 4 teams. Yeah.
So out of these 4 teams, obviously 4 legitimately are tied right now for the final playoff spot. If you had to pick one that you think was going to qualify, where do you go?
1, Miami.
Miami.
I would pick Miami.
That would be a lot of fun.
All right. How about you?
I would pick. I'm gonna go with the youngsters in Cincinnati. I still think there's a lot in the tank there. I really like what they're doing. And I think I don't think Miami has a ton of pressure, to be honest.
Right.
And I don't think Arizona has a ton. But both Arizona and Miami got off to these really, really big starts and have moved in the other direction, although Miami winners of 4 in a row. Cincinnati, it's been a little up and down, but they're like picked to be one of the worst teams in baseball. I think there's a lot of house money there. So, and I'm, you know, kind of biasedly just rooting to see Joey Votto
absolutely
at least one more time in the postseason. But, you know, that will be a really fun race coming up. We're going to keep looking at the national scope on the other side. We have just about 30 minutes to go. Kyle Glazer from Baseball America will join us next. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. This is Jays Talk Plus, streaming on the Sportsnet app, on Sportsnet 360, wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and across the Sportsnet radio network.
Advice from Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert in the Fan Morning Show's Wake and Rake. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, streaming on sportsnet.ca, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm Ben Schulman. She's Julia Kreutz. We have just about 30 minutes to go here on this Labor Day edition of Jays Talk Plus, filling in today for Blake Murphy. And we were looking a little bit around the majors, and we want to talk more about that, a little bit about the Athletics as well. And to help us do it, Kyle Glazer joins us now, Major League Baseball and prospects writer nationally for Baseball America. Kyle, really appreciate you joining us today. How are you doing?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
Doing well. Yeah, doing well. Good Labor Day so far. And, you know, the Blue Jays playing a team coming up in this week with a lot of guys that are either still considered prospects or recently graduated prospects. Obviously, the Oakland Athletics record is not very good, but you have guys like Zach Geloff just winning Rookie of the Month honors. What do you think of some of the pieces right now on the Oakland Athletics and their viability for the future?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a team that sold off all of their veterans over the last couple of years and went young, partially to justify a move to Las Vegas and put together a really bad record in the major leagues. But there are some good young players here. I mean, you mentioned Zach Geloff. He was a high draft pick, a top prospect, and he's really hit the ground running in the majors. You know, the young catcher, Shea Langeliers, has not been great, but, you know, he's got some power. He's someone they think they can build with. And You know, Brent Rooker was a nice find for them. So, I mean, they certainly have a couple of young players who you can say, yeah, you know, this might be a guy that they can keep through all the way to Las Vegas if their proposed relocation goes through as expected. But this is a team that isn't very good. And, again, there's a couple of young players who are interesting. There's not a bunch of them.
You mentioned Las Vegas and this potential move. It seems like it'll happen. It's all but a certain thing here. But is this moment in sort of the A's franchise history perhaps a setup for a contention window when that move comes in your mind?
They're a long way away from that. You know, one of the things with the A's, what made them so successful for so many years, you know, people talk about Moneyball, but they drafted and developed really, really, really well, you know, multiple times over the years. You go back to, you know, their early 2000s, Barry Zito, Tim Hudson, Mark Mulder, Jason Giambi, Miguel Tejada, Eric Chavez. All those guys were homegrown, you know, drafted during Tejada's case, signed as an international free agent. You go back even more recently, you look at, you know, and they had Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, you know, again, guys who were drafted and homegrown. They have not drafted well at all as an organization recently, and that's a big reason why they are where they are. So I would say they don't really have the pieces right now to say, oh, yeah, they'll be a contender in 4 years. Their farm system isn't really very good, despite the fact they're struggling so much in the majors. They're going to need multiple strong drafts in a row in order for you to say, yeah, you know, there might be a window of contention here. Right now with the players they have in their organization, there isn't one that's very apparent.
The Blue Jays got some big contributions yesterday from some of their guys in AAA. Not all of them the top prospects, but some guys coming up over the last couple weeks or so and really impacting it. How do you assess the farm right now for the Blue Jays and how they've performed this year?
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays farm system doesn't have a ton of impact guys in it right now, in part because they've graduated some of the great players, right? I mean, Bo Bichette was homegrown. Alejandro Kirk was homegrown. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was homegrown. Alec Manoah was homegrown. Now, obviously, a couple of those guys haven't had a great year this year, but there's been a tremendous wave of talent that's come up through the Blue Jays farm system over the years, and now it's just about kind of supplementing it. But you're right. You look at a guy like a David Schneider. You look at a guy like a Spencer Horwitz. You know, guys who have come up and provided some immediate impact and been good contributors, and it's important to have those guys. You have the stars that come through, but you also need the complementary pieces who can come up and help you. And those two guys have done it. So the Blue Jays have had a good pipeline of talent coming through really for a few years now. And I think that's one of the strengths of the organization and, you know, why they've been successful. Although I know this year hasn't been as hoped. You know, this is still a team that's right in the thick of the wild card race and well above 500, despite the fact a lot of key players have struggled. And a lot of that is because they have homegrown talent they can pull up and call up upon.
Kyle, that said, there are still perhaps a handful of prospects that could impact the Blue Jays, say, last year, someone like Relvis Martinez or Addison Barger. Is there anyone that is on your radar to get promoted next year and really make an impact for this team or for any other team where they might end up?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the young left-hander, Ricky Tiedemann, who's a really, really, really talented young pitcher with a great arm from the left side. The biggest thing with him is just staying healthy. He hasn't shown the ability to really, you know, hold up over a full season yet, you know, throw 100-plus, 120 innings in the minors. He missed some time this year with some shoulder injury stuff, but when he's been on the mound, he's been pretty darn good, at least when he's been on the mound, you know, fully effective and fully healthy. Even this year, you know, kind of sidetracked by injuries a little bit, he's striking out nearly 18 batters per nine. So really, really good arm from the left side. If he can just stay healthy, you know, he's someone that you can say, yeah, this is someone the Blue Jays might be able to plug into their rotation some point next year and let him grow and hopefully develop into a key rotation piece for them.
Do you think with the injuries he suffered this year and that, you know, preventing him from progressing, that he's going to start next year in the minors regardless of where he finishes?
Yeah, most likely. Again, you know, he's in double A right now, and sometimes we do see teams, especially recently with how aggressive teams have been promoting guys. You know, maybe if he finishes this year strong and goes in and wows some people in camp, I think theoretically you could say he'd break camp. But again, I would certainly think that given his injuries, given the need to build up, It would be most likely he starts next year in the minors and just builds up his durability and then gets the call up.
You mentioned that teams are promoting guys more aggressively. We obviously saw that to like the nth degree with the Angels for very obvious reasons, but it's been a thing around baseball. Why do you think that teams are maybe spending less time with their guys in the minors and graduating them more quickly than traditionally they did in years past?
Yeah, well, it's twofold. I think some of it's a case-by-case basis. You look at a team like the Angels or the Padres are moving guys quickly, and some of that is desperation. Just trying to find something that works, name something that sticks. We've seen teams speed guys to the minors before, and a lot of times it's front offices that know their job is on the line or they have to win this year, and they're just trying anything. So that's part of it. But the other part of it is, for cases where that isn't necessarily the situation where teams aren't desperate, minor league reorganization has kind of changed what the minor leagues are. And I'm meaning when Major League Baseball eliminated the short season A affiliate level, eliminated minor league teams across the country, and then kind of consolidated the minor leagues. And with that, low A and high A, those two levels are so much worse than they were before. A lot of teams feel like they can skip their players over those levels or move them above them very, very quickly because they think a lot of their college players in particular aren't going to get anything from being at those levels. And I tend to agree. So you see guys go straight to double A or they go to double A after very, very little time in the class A levels. And then once you're in double A, you're in striking distance from majors. So if the guy in double A is performing well, you start thinking about it.
Kyle, I wanted to shift the focus a little bit back to the Blue Jays here. We have been talking about Davis Schneider, at length, and rightfully so, with the type of season that he has put together here, and obviously a small sample size. But what have you seen from him, and what is sort of the key to this continued dominance? I keep saying that we are still waiting for him to cool off, and it hasn't happened yet. To what do you attribute that?
I mean, he can hit. It's as simple as that. I mean, Davis Schneider can hit. I think with him, look, obviously, I think it's fair to say he's not going to hit 397 and, be on a 50-plus home run pace over the course of his career. But, again, some guys just have that knack for hitting, and he has shown he has that. Again, will he be a superstar type who, is one of the best players in Blue Jays lineup long-term? I think that would probably be a stretch, but is he someone who can help them over the course of a full season as a good contributor and potentially start a little bit for them? Yeah, I mean, you can see it happen. Again, he can hit. He's shown some power in the minors over the last 2 years, really. We've seen his ability to get on base be fairly consistent throughout his career. He's got that really, really good strike zone discipline. If you have a guy who controls the strike zone and can hit for some impact and get the bat to the ball, good things can happen. You had a little bit of speed element there. He's stolen some bases in the minors as well. Like, again, there are pieces here to work with where you say, yeah, this is a guy who should help the Blue Jays long term, whether it's in a starting role or more of a strong contributor type of role.
Obviously Schneider, despite how well he's played, not playing enough games to really be in the mix for an accolade like a Rookie of the Year or something like that. You had written about that and listed Yoshida, I believe, as the AL front runner. What do you think kind of the battle is going to be between a Yoshida, a Gunnar Henderson? Are there other people you think are in the mix, and how likely do you think it is that the new Red Sox ends up winning it?
Yeah, again, it's really, really tightly packed in the American League right now. I mean, that's the thing. Nationally, you kind of look at Corbin Carroll and say, the award is his as long as he continues to do what he's doing. But in the American League, it's going to come down to, do the voters value, more advanced stats like WAR, which Gunnar Henderson has a pretty good lead in, or do they value the traditional stats, batting average, hits, leading all rookies and hits, doubles, average, OPS, et cetera. And then maybe someone like Yoshida gets more of the edge. It'll be really interesting to see how the awards voters kind of, value and weigh each stat. Josh Young probably would have won the award, but he got hurt, the Rangers third baseman. So that really threw the race open. It's really going to come down to the wire here. And I think it'll be interesting to look at, you know, voters' behavior and what kind of stats they reward, because if you go old school, Yoshida's probably the favorite. If you're new school, it might be Henderson.
Kyle, these are obviously the big names here in the rookie conversation, but I am wondering if there has been anyone this season that came up and sort of surprised you, sort of a Davis Schneider type of guy, but, you know, someone that really opened your eyes and performed unexpectedly well here.
Yeah, I think one guy that you have to give some credit to is Dodgers center fielder James Outman. You know, coming into the year, you thought, hey, he'd probably be a platoon center fielder who played good defense, maybe stole some bases, hit for some power, but might struggle to make enough contact to play every day. Instead, he came out and seized the Dodgers center field job, got off to a blazing start, and then we saw the league adjust to him, and he went through a pretty bad slump where he thought, okay, you know, maybe this is going to tail off a little bit. And then he adjusted back and started hitting again. So I think with James Outman, you've seen him elevate himself from, okay, you know, instead of maybe being a partial contributor in a platoon role, now the Dodgers have a center fielder of the future. I think that's the biggest guy you have to look at. And then Matt McClain with the Reds. Obviously, Ellie De La Cruz gets a lot of pub because of how exciting he is. But if you look at it, Ellie De La Cruz has really not hit since the All-Star break, whereas Matt McClain has just continued to rake. He's been an above-average defender at both second base and shortstop. You know, he's someone who's a high pick, but he struggled last year. I saw him in the Arizona Fall League. He did not look good. I know I personally did not think he would be the kind of player he's become. And he's really been the Reds' best rookie, you know, which is saying something when you look at Andrew Abbott, Spencer Steer, and of course, Ellie De La Cruz. What Matt McClain has done has been nothing short of fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, the Reds are dropping in prospect rankings rapidly because they're just graduating everyone at once right now. And maybe a future situation coming up with that as we see the Yankees call on a lot of their young players as well. Obviously, Jason Dominguez stole some of the headlines for the Yankees and in all of baseball this past weekend with two home runs in Houston in his opening series as a major leaguer. You had covered Dominguez in your most recent podcast. What do you think about that series? And what were your expectations and are your expectations for the month of September and that weekend in October that we'll see Jason Dominguez as a Yankee?
Yeah, I mean, look, anytime you have a 20-year-old rookie come up and hit two homers in his first series against a good team like the Astros, it's certainly, certainly impressive. I mean, Jason Dominguez was one of the highest-rated international prospects to come out in years, received $5.1 million when he was 16 years old, and you know, has had to deal with some pretty sky-high expectations, and for the most part has held up very well under them, both in terms of on-field performance and dealing with all the off-field stuff. So you give him a lot of credit for his maturity and ability to be resilient in the face of the spotlight. I think with him, you know, you see, I mean, look, he's very, very big and strong and physical for 20 years old, especially, you know, seeing the opportunity, you know, we've seen some of his power. He can play the outfield. He's a good athlete for his size. He can steal some bases. He can get on base. I think just seeing him show you a little bit of all those skills here this final month of the season is going to be what to watch for. If he goes completely, you know, haywire and continues hitting like he has throughout the entire month, awesome, great, cool. But even if he goes through some struggles or can't maintain it, which would be fully understandable for a 20-year-old in his first month in the big leagues, I wouldn't worry about it. Just you're looking for, again, all the abilities he possesses, the speed, the power, the ability to play defense, and just let him kind of grow and learn and watch the quality of his at-bats and see what position he's able to put himself in for next year when he could potentially break camp with the Yankees on opening day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if the Yankees have taught us anything about him or about Davis Schneider, you look to 2016, Aaron Judge kind of struggled in that stretch. Gary Sanchez almost stole a Rookie of the Year in 50 games, and that didn't end up necessarily being where their two careers would line up. We will be very interested to see how all the graduated guys and some of the prospects work out as well. Kyle, really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime, guys.
That is Kyle Glazer of Baseball America covering prospects and everything Major League Baseball as well. And yeah, for the Blue Jays, which we touched on, it's not the most loaded system anymore. I mean, between, like he said, graduations, if you look at guys that are on this team right now, a lot of prospects have been dealt to get those guys, but there are some interesting pieces going forward and more of a discussion for the offseason. But even outside of the Barger Martinez, is a guy like Alan Roden at AA has been really good. And I think that there are definitely some pieces that can help the Blue Jays out in the future.
I would even say a guy like Leo Jimenez, who isn't necessarily on the radar or, you know, on the big spotlight here, but who has very quietly put together a very good minor league season as well. So there are some interesting pieces and guys that can come up and contribute. We expect the Blue Jays to still spend some money in free agency. It's not like they have to rely on these guys that are shining through the minors. This is very much a team within its contention window, and that is why the farm system isn't as loaded as it was in the past. It's kind of the cycle of baseball, if you will, right? You backfill, then you trade your prospects, and you contend if you're doing it the right way. That's kind of the way to go. The Blue Jays are going to be big spenders. That is not really up for debate. This is far from their last year of contention here. There will be more in the future, and there will be some big signings, and I expect there to be some trades as well. That means that the farm system is probably going to take a little bit more of a hit. But all things considered, I still believe that the Blue Jays are in a good spot to trade from that system if they have to supplement the major league roster. Expect some more guys to come up a la Davis Schneider or Spencer Horwitz next year and play those sort of fringe roles for a team that is in contention right now.
Blue Jays playing today against a team not in contention, the Oakland Athletics. First pitch at 4:07 across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Jose Berríos and Ken Waldichuk. We touched on it a bit, but before we wrap up here in a couple minutes, Jose Berríos was one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball in July. He didn't allow more than 2 earned runs in any of his starts, had an ERA below 2, struck out 28 guys in 29 and a third innings. You get to August, and he's allowed at least 3 earned runs in 4 out of his 5 starts. He's coming off back-to-back 5 earned run allowed games, one against Baltimore, which you semi-understand, a team that for his entire career he's dominated until that start, but one against the Washington Nationals, who are not a very strong team with the bat. What do you look for here from Berríos to try to get things a little bit back in check?
Yeah, it was a weird stretch for him in August. I think that we saw maybe Berríos regress a little bit to the bad luck that he experienced last season, in which any batted ball turned out to be a runner on base, right? Instead of him getting a little bit of luck or a little bit of help from the defense, which had been the case more often than not this year. Last year was very much an outlier in that sense. He experienced some extremely bad luck with the batted ball, as did Kevin Gausman, of course. And I think that what we saw was kind of a regression to that. It was his first career loss against the Orioles.
And I think that was his 13th or 14th start against Baltimore in his career.
That's a pretty big deal, right? It shows that he has been dominant, and he was dominant all year as well against Baltimore. But the fact is that, the day came with Baltimore. I would very much attribute it to extremely good approach and game plan. That lineup has been consistent with its approach and with its game plan pretty much all season long, and that is why they are at the top of the AL East right now. And perhaps you can look at the Nationals game and attribute a little bit more to bad luck. He has been, when you look at, say, the swing and miss stuff, it's not like he is falling flat. He's pitching relatively well. Like, the breaking ball is breaking, the fastball is reaching the expected velocity. It may be a little bit about pitch mix and a little bit about some bad luck, and some of that will naturally sort of fall back into a more natural position, but it is a little bit up to him as well to mix in those pitches, and it's up to the defense to help him out as well.
Yeah, Berríos can also keep it in the yard in what's a big ballpark. Right, that would be great. He's given up multiple homers in 3 out of the last 4 starts, and those are starts in which he's given up 5, 5, and 4 runs, respectively. does get to go against one of the, if not the worst offense in baseball. The Blue Jays will take on certainly the worst pitching staff in baseball by ERA plus, which gives the Rockies a bit of a break on their ERA for pitching in Colorado. Oakland is way behind them in ERA, and the Athletics either give up the most or second most runs in baseball. That one should be a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun. Appreciate you tuning in. 407 Jose Berríos against Ken Waldichuk. Coming up next, Jesse Rubinoff, Kevin Michi on Sportsnet today. Show Ali with pregame at 3 p.m. and Jays Talk postgame with Blair and Barker after today's contest. She's Julia Kreutz. I'm Ben Schulman. Behind the scenes, Nick Blackmore, Jennifer Rolnick, and Tristan Marcajani. Really appreciate you tuning in today. Don't worry, Jake from Sault Ste. Marie. Blake will be back tomorrow, and we will see you later on the Sportsnet Radio Network.